Welcome to the Tech Flash. If you're looking to increase your ed tech knowledge that's quick and easy to listen to, you have come to the right place. Let's join our host, Josh, and see what today's episode is all about.
Hello and welcome to the Tech Flash. Listen, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're tuning in. I think we've got some big things coming. Remember, we talked about in episode 79, just kind of the new wave, the new direction, not really new. And we've got a very special guest today. But before we get into that, so just remember, we're gonna be real today. Teachers, we don't necessarily need new ideas. We need things that actually, and this is the Tech Flush. So this is in the next 15 minutes, we're really going to work on building something, an idea, and just where we can use it tomorrow. So let's get ready for that. So listen, today we're going to talk about lesson designs, but really designing lessons through an experience. How can our students benefit from that? And just kind of the process that we may think as educators. So for today's episode, episode 81, we've got a guest here. We've got Michael Wesley. Michael is an instructional technology specialist out of Virginia Beach. He was named one of the EdTech magazine's 30K or K through 12 IT influencers to follow. And he is a featured speaker this year in June of 26 at ISTE. But more importantly, Michael really helps teachers take what they're already doing and turn it into something students actually want to be a part of. So, well, Michael, I appreciate you being on here. I'm glad we've connected.
Hey, Josh, great to be here too.
Before we really get into today's conversation, is there anything that you want to share with listeners out there listening and watching
sure.
the show today?
Sure. I actually am not trained to be a teacher. I went to college and I graduated with a degree in business emphasizing in human resource. Kind of similar, but not really. I was one of the original corporate converts. There was a wave of corporate converts back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Google it. It's a thing. And where corporate people were dissatisfied with the corporate world and were going into something more rewarding like education. So I did a master's program and boom, it was a full master's. It was before career switcher programs even existed. So I decided that I wanted to be an educator and that's what I did. And here I am 29 years later, heading into my 30th year. And I love it as much as I did my first 10 years of teaching. So and there's always challenges in education, but I still love coming to work to do what I do. And now I get to do the instructional technology side of it, which is like being the cruise ship director at your school because you have all the cool things, but it's not about the tool. When I think of it, it's about like, you know, what do we want the kids to do? There are tools that complement that and it can excite kids along the way and can create a better engagement. And it's just a matter of being that explorer and seeing how they pan out with the kids and what tech tools do what things. And then when you design this lesson or experience, you can chef those in. I'll have an appetizer here. I'll have a main course here, and I'm going to add this over here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I feel like there are a lot of tools out there, and there's a lot of process, especially in this new age of technology and the instruction side of things. But I'm always reminded that we need to go back to where we started, right? When we went to school, we got our master's, we got our undergrad in education, and learning how to create those lesson plans, and learning how to just be a teacher and how to organically pull those tech things in to make sure it's just not another part of the lesson. It's really one big piece of it. So with that being said, Michael, when you sit down to design a lesson, whether you're designing it to present, to you're working with a teacher in your building, what is something you think about?
Well, before technology came around like it is today, I was actually teaching in the classroom. And for me, it was what is going to excite these kids? Because, you know, you're given your scripted lessons and you're given your curriculums and they have all the lessons rolled out in there. And it basically day one, day two, they're organized and put together for you. And I was reading through them and I was not even excited as a adult. I think my biggest reflection is like in college, I wasn't really good with science, hated science. So I waited till my last year to take science. And I was in Arizona in Flagstaff. And I said, I'll take geology. Well, the geology professor got up in front of the class and he talked about the geology. And Arizona is rich in geology. He was talking about geology like a kid in a candy store. He loved it. And that passion for the subject just totally invaded everybody into that in the room. So that was kind of my mindset of how I would want to teach is from passion. And how could I make this interesting for kids? Because kids are interested in things and everybody has a cash point, like what can motivate a kid to do something. So I was looking at ways to get kids excited about learning and how could I maybe gamify it? Because guys always like to play a game. So those were some of the things that I was trying to redesign lessons before you could go to ChatGPT and say, make this lesson relevant, make it fun, give me six objectives or options that I can use. So that was me redesigning lessons back then. But when technology came into the play, by then I was looking for, okay, what outcome do I want? And that's where I start. What outcome do I want? What am I really focusing on? And what do I want the kids to leave with at the end of this? And then I think of that first. And then I say, okay, if I was this fourth grader, if I was this second grader, what's going to motivate them the most to get what I want at the end? How can I figure that out? And that's usually where an idea starts. And then it branches into other avenues of what you can add. So our school was selected to be an anchor school, which was one of the first one-to-one tech schools. So we had, it was like the Wild West. We were pretty much discovering what is a one-to-one ed tech class look like. And when we did that, we were going into different ways that you can put that together. And there were so many options. We learned about so many tools. It wasn't like it is today with tool after tool after tool. There were big tools and they came out slower. So we were able to jump on them and explore them to see which tools did what, because not all the tools did everything you needed. So that's where I kind of learned how to put tools together to create the ultimate tool in an app smash.
Yeah, I think like you're right. There are so many things out there, and to be able to pull different things and make that learning exciting for students. So it's not the same day in and day out certain program that we're using, but
right.
Really going back to like the original thought, how like before technology was really prevalent everywhere and you're a one-to-one school, pulling those fun ideas to make the learning fun. I think that's really what matters.
I mean, I look back on my education, even as a young kid, and I'm thinking about what was I really excited about? You know, what did I really enjoy doing? You know, everybody loved making a diorama. You know, I liked making a diorama. I have thoughts and opinions on that today. But what are you going to remember in next year? Do you want your kids to remember it 6 weeks from now, 6 years from now? How do you impact their lives to where they do remember those things?
That's true. And so, you know, you talk about these things, but really, Michael, what does that look like in a real classroom? Like we can talk about ideas, but how does that really look?
For me, it was gamification. I was in second grade and the kids need to learn their facts. So we got, okay, that's great. Back in the day, they did those facts. How many facts could you do in a minute? It was called a mad minute. And they would start a clock and then they would go through and do as many of them as they could. But how does that inspire a kid to go home and practice? Maybe a few of them, but not all of them. So I created a game, just a board game. It was a board game that had the number 0 through 12 on it, or not 0, 1 through, no, 2 through 12, 2 through 12. And there was no 7. So when they rolled the dice, they would, you know, 3 and a 4, they would say that was 7, or 5 and a 5, they got doubles, they get to roll again, you know, 5 plus 5 is 10. So they would state the equation, and then they would cover up that number. And then if they got the 7, they would get to take a snake out of the snake pit, and they would put that on the side of their board. And there were two ways to win. They could cover up all the numbers or they could have 7 snakes. So thus the name 7 snakes. So it was creating that simple game where these kids are rolling dice over and over and over again, repetitively, but enjoyably. So that was one of the examples of coming up with gamification and getting your kids to want to do that. You want to take the game home and play it with your family? Okay, sure. No problem. Here's an extra game.
Yeah. And that's really a low tech thing. And I know like this is the tech flush and we're supposed to share those like tech tidbits, right? But really all lessons don't need to have a piece of technology in it. So as we're designing a lesson, like we created a game board, we're thinking about what the students want, what that learning outcome needs to be for them.
To be fair, I did gamify it. That was prior. I had that game going prior to tech, but once tech came along, I basically created a game that had a link and I could send a link home to where parents could play it with their families digitally. And if they didn't have dice, there were digital dice that they could use. So it did evolve into technology. And with one link, I could send a short message to the parents. Hey, Johnny's having problems with their facts. Here's a cool way to do this at home with your kid. And they could pull it up on their phone. They could pull it up on any device that they had and play the digital version of that game. made it very easy to replicate, to send, to share, and to go into other classrooms and have other teachers, hey, here's my link. You want to use this? So it can be like a ripple effect when you have an asset like that.
Yeah. And we've had conversations about just a link and how it can change things. And I feel like technology does a great way of doing that, especially like with your game now. You created a link to where anybody can play it at home. They can play it on vacation. They can play it with their grandparents. It really breaks down those walls of the classroom to continue to build outside of that.
Exactly. And that link can go into a website that you can build with Adobe or Canva. You can put those links together and package them in a nice little package for your kids to be excited about the visual, pulling it up. Oh, let's play this game. Click. And there it is right there for them.
Now, has your process changed over time, or is it continually we're looking at the student outcomes, we're looking at the student first and then seeing what we can do from there?
Well, I'm a big data guy. I love data. So when Quizzes came around, which is now Wayground, I had data in an instant. You know, I would open up a lesson. I would do my direct instruction. The kids, when they came in the morning, would have taken already a pretest during morning work when everyone's settling in. And then I could pull up the data table on Monday and I can see kids who got it and kids who didn't get it. The kids who got it, I had something for them to move on to. And the kids who didn't get it, we did more practicing together. And then that night I would send a message home in Seesaw. And I would send them a link, the parents a link to a video of what I taught. And it wasn't always me. It could have been somebody from YouTube teaching the same way I taught it. And I sent them another link to like a Quizzes that the kids can practice. If your kids don't do well on this, then you know you can create more problems with it and practice it at home. And usually the next day, half of the kids that didn't understand it dropped off to an understanding level. So by Wednesday, I would have like 3 to 5 kids who were struggling, whether they didn't have parents at home that were able to help them. But the other kids, like in the middle group, I had the higher group help them understand it, because sometimes a kid explaining it to another kid is the best way you can go, because they can say it in a way that makes sense to them sometimes. So I would do that. By Thursday, my 3 to 5 kids that I had in my small group that I was working with directly, I could send home snapshots and Seesaw of their work and message the parent, and it goes directly to their phone. And everybody has a phone usually within 2 feet of their body at all times. So that was an asset to me to be able to use that information and share that with the parents and give them something to practice with the kids. Because they just need direction. And, you know, in second grade for direction, they take that and they could see that. So if they got a test back on Friday, if the test was on Friday on that skill, I take a picture of the paper that they took their test on. And if they didn't pass it, then the parent had received communication all week long. And, you know, Seesaw says that you've seen the message. So it was like a great way to get them involved and share, like also even beyond that, Kodak moments of their kids in school and what their work is that they don't normally see. Because how much of work do parents actually get to experience and see while it's happening in the classroom? It changed a whole experience for me. And I think that the best way I can describe it is Dave Burgess from Teach Like a Pirate has this fantastic video about a gift shop moment. And if you Google that, you can find that on YouTube. And if not, it's going to be in the show notes. But it's a great video that says when you go to the aquarium and you're there and you're looking at sharks and you're in that tunnel that has the sharks swimming right over you. Aquariums, what do they do at the end? You're getting towards the end because, you know, it's a path. And then you've seen all these cool things and then you're in the gift shop. When you get out, the first thing they pour you into is the gift shop. And then you're seeing those stuffed animals, sharks, and you're seeing the shark teeth of the sharks you just seen above your head. And that's kind of how Dave says it too. So that is like an experience. Like, how can you get kids to have that experience to where they're in the museum looking at the sharks above their head? And then they get to the museum gift shop and they see all those things that they can take and look through. And that was kind of like how I see it. How many times can I create that? And how many times can I do that? And how can I make this bigger with the bigger picture and stepping back to where we can turn this whole set of activities into the gift shop moment?
I love that. I love the gift shop idea. That video is awesome. It'll be in the show notes for people to watch that. It's just incredible. And just a fun way of thinking about it. Now, with that thought, Michael, what is one move? We've talked about a lot of things today. But what is one move a teacher can make tomorrow that would actually change what their students are learning in the classroom?
I think that one move could be is, you know, I always, for me, it was putting myself into the shoes of a kid and seeing it through a kid's eyes and like what would excite them. And I'm a big kid at heart, so that was an easy jump. But as far as teachers in general, what is one thing that you could do is just to step back and think of what do kids really like in your class? Do they like Pokemon? Do they like, you know, this Demon Hunter cartoon, which I still haven't seen. I hear it's great K-pop music, but what do they get excited about? So take something that they get excited about and how can you put that into your lesson? And the great part is that for you AI folk who are dabbling in ChatGPT, take that idea and say, how can I make this lesson and upload that lesson you're going to give in there? And you could just ask your ChatGPT or Gemini, how can I make this into a K-pop Demon Hunter lesson or a Pokemon lesson and relevant for my kids? Or if you don't think of it on your own, because like back in the old day for us older folk, we had to think of those things on our own. But now you can put it through there and within minutes, you can save on the cognitive load and get those ideas of how you can do that. And it's a lot of trial and error and failure. And it gets to the point, especially when you're including technology in it, that there's going to be a failure. But anytime you fail using any kind of technology, you're going to learn more than had you pulled off the perfect lesson. So put yourself in the kids' shoes, find out what they're interested in, and it gets them excited, and then convert what you have to teach into a lesson that includes that and excites your kids about how they're learning it.
And it really isn't about doing one more piece of technology. It's not doing one more, creating a fancy lesson plan. It's really putting yourself in the student's shoes, understanding what their needs are, what excites them. It's just like when we go to the aquarium, you see all the sharks, having that excitement. And then we're actually going to see that impact that students are doing. I think that's incredible. That's a great piece of advice. And I appreciate that, Michael. So that's it for now. One move. Try that tomorrow. Put yourself in your student's shoes, understand them, and create something awesome. So try it tomorrow, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Tech Flush podcast. Stay tech savvy, keep those gadgets charged, and remember, teachers and technology go hand in hand, connecting students to a world of knowledge for an electrifying learning experience. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and spread the word about the Tech Flush to your friends. Catch all episodes on Apple Podcasts. See you next time on the Tech Flush.